Good afternoon.
Legislative update.
We'll try that again. Good afternoon. All right, I'll let you get by with that one. It's nice to be here this afternoon. I'm here for a brief update on what was a whirlwind of a legislative session. And as we go through this, you need to take care of yourself. Please stand up, get more snacks, get that dessert if you didn't get the chance to eat it. It's delicious. We want to make sure you're taken care of. Before diving into all of the outcomes of the 2026 session, I want to do some stage setting here. The legislature met for a short session, so just 35 days to get through some key priorities. And both chambers controlled by Democrats had some big priorities and some big obstacles going into the session. First and foremost, they faced a large budget crisis of around $800 to $900 million for the current biennium that we're in. They also were facing the fallout of the referral of the 2025 transportation package, which was on top of that another budget crisis for the Oregon Department of Transportation. And lastly, there were some key priorities for Democrats coming into session related to responding to federal action. So we'll talk more about that as we go through, but that's just the context for how we started that first Monday in February. And this slide here will look familiar to you. If I could get a show of hands, who attended one or more of our Friday legislative session updates? That's a strong show. Thanks for coming out. This slide looks very familiar to you, I'm sure. This is a quick timeline of what we saw during session. You see that we had a wonderful month of February and then just a week and a day to get all of the work of the state legislature done. We saw a couple walkouts occur during session. This has become a bit of a norm for the Oregon legislature. And really this time, the walkouts felt like a pause. They did not feel like the traditional walkouts that we've seen in the past where legislative work shuts down for days or multiple days. We saw a couple walkouts that delayed floor sessions, but really, again, they felt like more pauses to the process where Democrats and Republicans came together to work on solutions that were more amenable to both parties. And as you see by that orange square, rather that yellow square, they even got done a little bit early, ending just before 5 p.m. On that last Friday of session. And they got a lot of work done. Over 104 measures were passed onto the governor's desk, and over 100 bills were assigned by the governor in the 2026 session. We made some key progress on LOC priorities. We'll talk more about that later. And we did some important groundwork setting for the 2027 session. That includes talking more about what might happen with the transportation package, and in addition to some of the good governance work that we need to get done in 2027. But I want to take a moment to reflect on the LOC priorities that we set together. As you may recall, LOC sets legislative priorities per biennium. So that means that right now we're working on our next set of legislative priorities right as we're understanding where our current set landed. You'll see on the slide here we made incredible progress on some key priorities, and there's some we didn't quite yet finish. Again, we'll talk more about that in a moment, but I just want to share some of the key wins that LOC and you all helped us achieve. And I want to know, just another show of hands here, who provided written testimony this session? Right? Who provided verbal testimony online this session? And who made the drive to Salem to provide testimony? That is great. At our next spring conference, I want to see as many hands up as possible because the list of wins you see here are not due to the LOC staff. They are due to you all. Showing up in Salem, talking to your legislators, ensuring that your community's needs are well reflected in what comes out of the legislature. That led to some wins related to the transient lodging tax, a hard-fought battle, yes. A hard-fought battle over many sessions. We succeeded in securing flexibility for the use of those revenues. We also saw another important bill pass, and one I think might be the one where we've seen the most member engagement. We were able to lower some match requirements for grants for small cities. And we'll talk more about that in a moment, but that's another win. And I see a lot of faces around this room that helped us get that bill passed. So thank you for your engagement there. And in addition, I want to just point out, we have some pictures on the slide here. This is truly just a smattering of the folks that engaged this session. We saw a lot of cities submit testimony, call their legislators, have every member of their council call a legislator. That did happen this session, and other key wins. And I just want to say thank you for your work. Nothing would get passed through LOC's advocacy if not for the local work, the grassroots work that you all do every day. As I mentioned, the state budget took up a lot of air this legislative session and will continue to do so in the future. The context for this being that large budget hole, and it had a few key causes. You might recall H.R. 1 that passed late last year in Congress. That bill had tax code changes, and Oregon is automatically connected to the federal tax code if not for legislative action. The legislature did take key actions to disconnect from the federal tax code in certain areas, which led to around $310 million in gains in revenue no longer foregone. In addition, H.R. 1 increased implementation costs for agencies like the Oregon Health Authority and the Oregon Department of Human Services, as well as shift some costs from federal funds to local funds in those programs. The legislature was also dealing, like you all are dealing with revenue downturns. So the revenue forecast was trending downward to keep up with what the state calls current service level. And at the same time as revenue is trending downwards, just like you all are seeing, inflation is impacting the state as well. These ongoing revenue challenges, as well as H.R. 1 and the referral of the 2025 transportation package, led to some cuts this session. Legislators forecasted very dramatic cuts. I'm happy to share that those did not come to reality in most cases. What we saw in reductions were much different than where we thought we might be. So the condition is that we were able to dress the shortfall with the federal disconnect. We were able to dress the shortfall with increased revenue. So the new revenue forecast that came in during session was higher than previous ones. And then there were a number of reductions that occurred individually at state agencies. Didn't lead to massive layoffs, that did not occur, but some positions are being held vacant at the state. But where we saw the most reductions and where this might impact you the most is with the Oregon Department of Transportation. The legislature swept some program funds, including Safe Routes to School, Connect Oregon, and others that would limit the state's ability to provide grants this biennium. So they're not doing grants in the 2026, but we'll be doing those grants in 2027 at lower amounts. In addition to that, ODOT is holding a number of positions vacant, but it is reprioritizing positions that directly impact folks on the ground. So maintenance stations are starting to hire up, DMVs are starting to hire up, but some of those central positions that are in the agency will remain vacant. And while the legislature had to make key reductions, we also saw some adds on the budget. This includes important bonding investments, including supporting the city of Portland and keeping the trailblazers in the city with the Moda Center. This included a number of investments in affordable housing, preservation, and financing. And importantly, this included direct funding to local projects, and 14 cities were able to receive direct funding. And I just want to say, do we have any of those cities in the room? Did anyone receive direct funding? Woo! It was a one city here. Thanks, Philomath. We're glad to see some direct funding there. And I'm sure you can talk to Philomath about what that looked like and the groundwork that they laid to get to some funding this session. In addition, we saw increases in other programs that cities rely on, including $10 million for the infrastructure fund, some investments in preparation for this upcoming wildfire season, which unfortunately we all know will not be a great one. And last, some additional resources for the industrial site fund. Now that's just the budget stuff. There was, of course, policy changes that the legislature advanced. And I'll talk through these in portfolio areas. I might not spend a lot of time on each bill. We'll have some time for questions at the end, and I'll also encourage you to continue to use LOC as a resource, either reaching out to myself directly or members of our lobby team. Starting with finance and revenue, just another huge win for the transient lodging tax here. I see a couple people that testified on that bill. If I could get a show of hands, who testified in support of passing the increases to, or the flexibility for transient lodging taxes? That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm going to stop counting. Thank you for coming to Salem. Thank you for helping us get this through. We sought to change the allocation of transient lodging taxes to provide more of that direct support to your general fund, and we were successful in achieving that. So rather than 30% of your revenues from transient lodging taxes going to your city's operations, in starting the 2027 tax year, 50% of those revenues can go to your city's general fund. They also included new uses for the tourism component of transient lodging tax. There's a new resiliency grant that was included in that bill that would allow cities to support local businesses, other entities, and providing resilient communities related to tourism. So maybe a hotel could use some solar panels to ensure that they can survive or be resilient through a disaster. Those types of things were considered. I will say, if you want to move forward with that, please do reach out to the LOC. There's quite a bit of legislative intent on the record on what those grants can provide, and we want to make sure you're compliant with what the legislature intended, and we're here to be your resource to ensure that that's the case. In addition, the local act also included new reporting requirements for transient lodging taxes, so be sure to watch out to the, in your bulletin. The LOC can help and support the coordination of that reporting to make sure that we're compliant with that state law and we're showing a good faith effort to mitigate some of the concerns we heard from the tourism industry related to this bill. I just want to take another moment. This was a long fought effort. We were really excited to get it through this session, but many recall that in 2025, the LOC and our members spent a long time fighting for this bill. And we didn't get it that time, and there's been many efforts in the past to increase flexibility for this revenue. And I want to say we wouldn't have gotten it this session if not for all of that action, if not for the momentum that we have built year over year, session over session. And as we think about things that might not pass and things you're wanting to work on, just want to remind you that it might take us a couple efforts to get things through, but your LOC is committed to working with you and your priorities to do so. And I'll also just note here, is anyone aware of the penny shortage? Is anyone tracking that? Well, yes, many grocers have realized they're not able to give appropriate change. There was a bill to address that this session, which includes some new requirements. If you do have a rounding policy, please take a look at that bill. Reach out to me if you have questions. I'm happy to support you in ensuring your rounding policy is compliant with state statute. Now, I'm going to take a moment here and move on to what is a bigger conversation to be had around the ethics package. Many have known that the League of Oregon Cities and our local government partners have had some concerns with the implementation of ethics laws from the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. We worked over the interim ahead of the session on an ethics package led by Representative Nathan Sosa of Hillsborough. The Oregon Government Ethics Commission, LOC, local government partners, as well as media were part of a work group to develop the three bills you see on the screen here. Two of those bills are signed and now in law. They're not quite yet effective, but they are now in law. Who is familiar with the hot dog opinion? Show of hands. All right, well, for those that are not, the LOC inquired with the Oregon Government Ethics Commission about whether or not we could provide, whether or not local governments could provide Costco hot dogs was the example, but food to elected officials or members of city staff, and the answer was not what you would expect. So this bill clarifies that and allows exempts food and beverages from the prohibited use of office. So if you are having a long council meeting, if you are holding a staff retreat, you are able to feed those folks. So be sure to review that bill if that's something that you do. It seems silly that we needed to run a bill to do so, but we're grateful to have it passed. In addition, House Bill 4159 ensures that we have local government representation on the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. As I mentioned, we've just been having concerns. There's a lack of understanding of what implementation for cities looks like and the administrative burden that is being placed on cities. So now one of the appointees to the Oregon Government Ethics Commission will be from local government that will be appointed by the governor every year. So we're grateful to get that representation on the council, yes. And those are the two pieces of good news. I have one piece of bad news to report out, and if you've been tracking the bulletin, you know this one well. Last week, the governor vetoed House Bill 4177. We're deeply disappointed by this veto. Oslo 4177 would have addressed some of the complications we're seeing with the Oregon Government Ethics Commissions and their interpretation of public meetings and serial meetings law. Many of you have received guidance from that commission about how you can talk to the media, how you can talk to your constituents, what community events you can attend. Unfortunately, the discourse and dialogue around that bill was not fully comprehensive of what that bill did for cities. And the governor vetoed it out of concern that it would hurt public trust of public meetings. Now, we know that this bill would have addressed a number of the administrative burdens and the concerns you have about ensuring you're informed going into public meetings. Unfortunately, we are at a place where the bill has been vetoed, but we are already thinking about a 2027 bill and getting together a work session to pass it. So I want to assure you that while we're not successful with getting this bill this session, just like with the transient lodging tax, we're going to go back at the apple, and we think we have good grounding to better tell the story of the impact of Oregon Government Ethics Commission's decisions and ensure that we have an agency that's a partner to local government and helping us all work on good governance. And I do just want to say, following the legislative, the City Awards was challenging for me. That's what a big win for all of the cities that were nominated and awarded. And I heard many examples of cities working to increase transparency in their operations, working to increase public involvement in their operations. And I want to say flatly, we know that you all care about transparency. You want your constituents to be able to track what's happening. And we need to do a better job ensuring that as we're working on this bill, the legislature knows that we can do both. We can reduce administrative burden and ensure the public is engaged and informed in the process. So more to come on this, and certainly we'll be talking about this at the fall conference and be asking you all to mobilize in support of the next government ethics package, but more to come. I want to take a moment to talk about housing and land use bills. I probably could spend the rest of the time talking through these bills, so I will go at a very high level and encourage you all to reach out to Alexander Ring as you have questions about how to implement this in your city. First and foremost, there was a large housing omnibus bill, House Bill 4037. It included many provisions, but where it matters most to you is there's updates to public hearing requirements and notices related to housing. So in some cases, public hearing requirements were removed, notices were removed, and it's important that you track that because you are no longer prohibited to require public notices in certain places. In addition, there's two bills that changed the ability for cities to expand their UGB. Show of hands, who struggles with their UGB? That's it? I'm surprised by that. I see some more hands, thank you. In the 2024 session, the legislature took an effort to address one-time UGB expansions after one-off bill, after one-off bill, after one-off bill, where cities came in to do individual expansions. Instead, there is now a one-time UGB expansion that has been amended by two separate bills. One addresses the ability to have more senior housing, and the other just provides some flexibility to that new program. So if you're thinking about UGB expansions, if you need some technical assistance, I want to again encourage you, reach out to the LOC, we're here to help, and we have experts that can help you navigate that process and point you in the right direction. Now, economic development. Who heard this session was going to be an economic development priority session? Did that trickle out? A couple people. I heard some laughs, maybe. There were two key economic development bills this session, and only one made it to the governor's desk. She signed House Bill 4084. It was her economic development package. Who's a number of provisions? What matters to you all is the enterprise zone provisions. There's some changes related to flexibility for local governments. And unfortunately, there's a new preemption for the standard enterprise zones. While this doesn't impact rural enterprise zones, there's a temporary pause on the ability for enterprise zones, standard enterprise zones, to support data centers. There's been a lot of conversations about the impact of data centers. You heard President McKenna say, home rule is what's important to us, and if data centers work for your community, we need to let them work for your community. So we're disappointed to see this preemption in this bill, grateful that it only applied to standard enterprise zones, and grateful that it has a time limit. For those of you that were here in the morning session, you heard that the governor has a work group on data centers looking at the challenges. I want to assure you the LOC, local governments, have been at that table, supporting that work group, and we'll continue to fight and defend your ability to use enterprise zones and other incentives in the way that makes the most sense for your community, because we know all 241 cities have 241, maybe more, unique needs. So if you have questions about that, happy to connect after this as well. Now on to transportation. I want to start with the bill that's on the bottom. The May election is coming up, and I've mentioned this a couple times, but do want to get into a bit more detail here. The legislature held a special session in October of 2025 to pass a transportation package. It included some key revenue-raising provisions that would go to the state highway fund and then be split, with a 20% of that going to Oregon cities. Those revenue-raising provisions of the bill were referred to the ballot, and Senate Bill 1599 moved that to the May primary. So on our May primary is a referendum for those revenue-raising components. The common logic is it is likely to go down, and those revenue-raising portions of that bill are likely to be struck down by voters. But in the off chance that that common logic is wrong, watch for those results and plan for that in your budgeting. But I don't have a crystal ball in front of me, but if I did, I think I would know where it would go. In addition, on the transportation side, and I'm going to ask for another show of hands here, who has had scooters or other micro-mobility devices zooming by too fast on your sidewalks? There's some increased ability and changes in the definition of those types of devices and authority for cities to regulate those devices. So if you're concerned with those devices, have your public works or transportation folks reach out to myself or ODOT. We're happy to support any code improvements you might need to do to regulate those devices. And I see one hand over here that we are good on time, so I'm happy to take now.
I just need to remind people, mobility devices cannot be regulated according to the Americans with Disabilities Act. Punish the deed, not the breed. We need to address the individual, not the machine. So please keep that in mind.
Yes, thank you. Very important to consider. This is mostly about those really quick scooters that maybe some teens or preteens are zooming around on, and not mobility devices that folks rely on to get around from point A to point B. Yes, and the bill does include some distinctions. Just to make that more clear, there's a distinction between micro-mobility devices that are for folks to transport around and those that might be ridden by some folks in your community that are causing danger. And I know that there was just an accident, unfortunately, in California related to one of those non-mobility devices. The naming moniker is a little bit confusing. It's important to dive in. I'm happy to connect offline as there's more questions. And the last bill here, Senate Bill 1544, changed dismantler repermitting requirements. I'm not going to get into details, but if you have codes on this, just want to make sure that you or your city attorney are looking into it and providing necessary updates as needed. Now, I mentioned at the top some of the stage setting for the session was response to federal action. Where we see that response is in these law enforcement bills. I want to flag for you, I didn't get this on the slide because it's late breaking news, but House Bill 4138 relates to IDs and unmasking for law enforcement officials. The Ninth Circuit actually just had a ruling out of California this week that will impact the enforcement of this bill. The Supremacy Clause does not allow states to regulate the actions of federal government, even if we're regulating our own actions. So this bill is in a bit of a legal question at the moment, so I'll pause talking about it. Happy to again connect after this. However, I know many cities use automatic license plate readers. There were some changes to how those devices can be used. The ability to share data for those devices was restricted. I want to be clear, if it's for a crime, you are still able to share that data and help support federal law enforcement, but there's restrictions on how it can be shared if there's no crime. In addition, it changes the records compliance of the public records management of data collected through automatic license plate readers. So you might need to update your records destruction schedules and ensure that you're not keeping those materials for longer than 30 days. And if you do have questions, again, LOC is happy to support you in implementing and complying with these state statutes. In addition, we had some wins related to recreational liability. As you may recall, this was one of LOC's priorities for 25-26. We had some increased changes that validates the use of recreational liability. Want to make sure you're talking to your city attorneys about this and considering this when using those waivers for your parks or other facilities. We also saw a reduction in barriers for energy facility siting. This included some increased ability for renewable energy siting, and Greg Miller is our energy and environment lobbyist. He's not here today. You might have heard his name mentioned a few times. I'm happy to connect and provide additional information and support. Now, this is the big win, and I want to do a quick shout out before we talk about the small cities grant matching bill. Matt Keating, are you in the room? I see you there. Matt is a Eugene City Councilor, an LOC member, Chief of Staff to Senator Manning, and I want to call him out and recognize him, if you could just help me in this moment. And you're like, why am I clapping? We had a bit of a roller coaster with this bill at the end, and if not for Matt and Senator Manning's incredible intervention, this bill would have been left in committee to die ahead of us adjourning sine die. It was a labor of love to get this bill through the finish line, and it impacts more than 80% of LOC members. It was a priority for us because of the way our members engaged and supported it. What the bill does is lowers grant matching requirements for 7 state programs. It includes ODOT programs, Business Oregon programs, water resources programs, and parks programs. It has a sliding scale for the grant matching. So if you're a city of under 20,000 residents, you are automatically benefiting from this. And then it goes down if you have 15,000, and then if you have under 10,000. So it's a sliding scale and also based on the grant. And we hear regularly that the grant matching requirements are a barrier for you in getting projects done. We're hopeful that this bill will help address that. So just one more time, thank you to Senator Manning and Matt and all of the other stakeholders for their work in this class. And last, this is another one of those moments on House Bill 4005. Takes many efforts to get things done. We set a priority to address water workforce issues. And we knew because of the budget crisis, this was not a time for LOC or others to be putting forward brand new programs for the state. So instead of doing that, we decided to create some momentum and recognize the professionals that are already in this work. Also, 4007 creates a Water Professionals Week, the first Saturday in October, running that full week, recognizing the great work of our water professionals. Now, this is key momentum to build if we do want to go back to the legislature. We're keeping the conversation going about why this work is important and why the workforce itself is important. So again, this was an LOC priority. We were not able to advance, but we kept the fire going. We're keeping it in folks' mind, and we'll take another bite at the apple when the budget situation is just a little bit better. Now, that was a lot of context. certainly not the end of the conversation on all of these things. So I want to just spend some time with you about ways you can engage in this work. If you have questions about any of the bills I discussed, about other bills that did not make it to these slides, our 2026 legislative report is live on the LOC website. It includes information about implementation dates, key links to bills, and contacts you can reach out to if you have questions. In addition, this has been mentioned a couple times, our policy committees are meeting. Can I get a show of hands if you're on a policy committee? Well, thank you so much for your work. If you are not on a policy committee, just to get you up to speed, they are meeting ferociously over the next few months to develop our 2027-2028 priorities. Any member of LOC is welcome to engage. These are public meetings. The postings are on our websites. We meet virtually. We'd love to have you. Our policy committees are working now to develop our priorities for the next biennium. And after they do that, they're going to start helping LOC staff with an update to the Oregon municipal policy. Now, show of hands, who has read the Oregon municipal policy? Who has never heard of it? fair. We haven't touched it since 2008, and we're going to be undergoing a rewrite of that policy to make it more usable for staff. So it's a document we can go to support us in advocating for you. And it's gonna we're gonna also better explain the use of our policy committees, how we set priorities, and how we work with you all to do that. So there'll be more chances to engage. You'll hear about it at this conference. You'll hear about it at the fall conference. You'll hear about it at the next spring conference, and then at the next fall conference is when we're looking to implement a, or rather approve a new Oregon municipal policy. So if you haven't been to one of President McInnes's presidential regional meetings about this, you should go to one. If you have questions. If you have questions about how about this policy, about how to get engaged, just reach out to anyone on LLC. We're happy to get you connected to this work, and we look forward to sharing more about what that looks like at the fall conference. And in addition to that, now is the time to be laying groundwork if you have needs or asks. Those 14 cities that were awarded direct funding, they started their work to get that funding many, many months before the session. And as you see here, advocacy is not just during session, it's not just during legislative days, it's not just when your representative or state senator has a town hall, it is year round. So be reaching out to your state representative, your state senator, be sharing your community's needs early and often. They can never hear it too many times, and promise me, if you feel like you're being annoying, you're doing the right thing. You should be annoying about your needs. So if you have questions about how to do this, LOC has some Lobbying 101 materials on our website, and you have a resource in the LOC lobby team. We're here to help you. We're here to support you in getting your priorities and understanding how to work with the legislature. And in addition, working early and often with your state representative and your state senator will help get you ready for when the deadline drops to make direct requests from the state legislature. And for those that have not been tracking these changes, just like Congress has the community-initiated projects, the legislature kind of has created their own earmark project process, and that requires you to work with your state senator or your state representative. So we hope that you do so. We encourage you to look at the Lobbying 101 resources, and of course, myself, any member of the LOC lobby team is a resource for you. We're here to work with you, with your staff, and ensure that what you need to get out of Salem is what we get out of Salem. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions. I see no hands.
Woo!
Woo! All right. Run. Oh, I see one hand here. Yes, Mayor.
Waiting for a microphone, thank you. I'd like some clarification on the lodging tax flexibility bill. Those of us who have grandfathered percentages prior to 2003, yeah, this only applies to post-2003 amounts, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Our marketing director had a different impression, and she didn't think it applied to us at all, but I think it applies to our 4% that we have instituted since 2003.
My assumption is yes, but hearing that, you might just want to connect with your city attorney to double check and make sure.
If we have one, thank you.
Yeah, Rob Corbett, city manager for the city of Pendleton. My comment is about homelessness in Oregon. Many of you know that Pendleton is dealing with a significant issue. Currently, our local political issue is about homelessness and the homelessness problem in Pendleton. A lot of cities around Oregon are dealing with homelessness. Many of you know homelessness is a big topic in other towns more than others. I'm going to tell you my opinion about the subject. I think that primarily homelessness in Oregon is a problem about Oregon's lack of services to the mentally ill and our inability to appropriately deal with addiction in our state. And when we talk about homelessness, the conversation can go down many different rabbit trails. We can talk about housing, we can talk about a lot of different things. We can talk about trauma, and the way that the state of Oregon deals with homelessness is they give service providers money in our communities, and the service providers go out and do their work, but they're largely working independently of each other. And when we look at our communities, there's really not a lot of coordination that's going on in our communities. It's very disjointed. The League of Oregon Cities is a very powerful association that can have significant influence on the state if we could be united. It is absolutely absurd that people who are mentally ill are allowed to be given the choice to live out on a sidewalk because we are told that they are capable of making choices for themselves when clearly they are not. It is absolutely absurd to think that people who are addicted are capable of making good choices for themselves. And the state has to get to a place where someone is making choices for these people because they are incapable of making choices for themselves. So what I am advocating for is that this association take a look at the state laws around being more mandatory treatment for addicts, so that they can be forced into either jail or treatment, which they will choose treatment. If they're given the choice of jail or treatment, they will choose treatment. And for those people who are mentally ill, they force them to get treatment for their mental illness. Because right now, they cannot make choices for themselves. But the state is allowing them the choice to live out on the streets when clearly they cannot do that. So the association, we as an association, need to push for tighter, more state regulations around mandatory treatment and for addicts and mentally ill people, period.
Thank you for sharing that. And I'll add, it is inhumane to let people suffer on the streets the way it's happening now. It's absolutely inhumane for all involved. For folks in the suffering and for folks witnessing the suffering, small businesses trying to survive through the suffering, it's what is happening isn't sustainable. I will say the state did take efforts to address civil commitment in the 2025 session. I haven't seen the implementation of that do what they intended it to do. The intention was for better law enforcement or other intervention when folks were in the street on crisis. Again, I haven't seen the implementation match what the legislative intent was. So would absolutely agree there's a crisis on our streets. Our housing and land use committee addresses issues of homelessness. I'll be bringing this back to the lobbyist that runs the committee. I think we have a couple of the committee members here in the room today. Certainly will be part of the policy committee discussion. Thank you for raising that.
Hi, I'd like to add to Rob's comments there. I see another trend in Oregon that is another part of homelessness, and that's the amount of jobs and industry that are leaving Oregon. People that used to work there wind up losing those jobs and wind up not making their mortgages or their auto payments, And now they now are homeless, trying to start all over and trying to find a job that used to pay what they used to get. And those are disappearing. And anybody that wants to try and start anything in Oregon, it's a real uphill battle. And a lot of them are just getting out.
I'm going to do another plug of a policy committee. This, next Thursday, not quite a week from today, our Finance, Revenue, and Economic Development Policy Committee will be focusing conversation on economic development concepts. I made a bit of a joke that there was a lot of talk around the legislature focusing on economic development this session that did not really materialize. We know you all are bringing forward incentives to business to keep them around, and we need the state to come to the table too.
Good to see everybody. Mike Gonzalez, city manager of the tiny but mighty Echo. Right up the road. So on the economic development front, so one of the things that we're facing, and I'm thinking probably a lot of small cities are facing, are the traffic improvement requirements that ODOT has on us. So currently we have 300 acres of developable land. I've got developers ready to build. I've got 150 plus acres that many of you will pass on your way to Portland. ODOT is swinging a huge hammer and saying, listen, you've got to pay millions, in some cases $30 million, to fix the overpass. So we're a small town. We're at the precipice of dying. I mean, literally, our property tax base is $120,000. We survive off our sewer and water. So if we're not able to do anything in the next 3 to 5 years, I don't know where we'll be. So not really a question here, just putting that on your radar, and I'll be glad to volunteer for the Economic Development Committee. So thank you.
Thank you, and let's connect after. I didn't talk about this at length, but the governor has established a transportation visioning committee to look at the next transportation package. These are the exact type of issues they tackle. Many folks know the name Jim Trett, former mayor of Detroit, former OMA president. I hear some woos. He is serving on that committee, and they'll be working to build a package for the governor to propose in 2027, and we'll be chatting about Echo's issues as well. Thank you.
Nicole, this is a 5-minute warning for everybody.
Dave Cunningham, Winston, the council president. We have 5 RV parks in our community, and on the transient tax, the majority of our 5 camps, people have been in transit there for living there for 5, 10, 15 years, and they're not counted into our city. And that has an impact on the city services. And the state refuses to allow these people. Now, we certainly understand that if you're under 30 days, that's fine. But if you're over 30 days and you've been there for years, they're getting the city services and costing us a lot of money and just feeding off the trough. So what can be done about that?
No, I'm not sure about the specific issue you're discussing. Let's connect and chat more. I think, you know, the regulations around transient lodging tax will be hard for us to address. When you get a big win through, it's hard to go back and touch what you just worked on. But there might be other solutions, so we'd love to connect with you after. All right, I know we are getting short on time here. I'm not seeing any immediate hands, but I will be just at the reception desk after this.